Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Today is the appearance of Nrisimha Dev, a ferocious form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I say a ferocious form, not the only one. Tomorrow is Buddha Purnima. Is that the appearance or the disappearance or the enlightenment or what is it? It's all three. All three happened on the same day at different stages. Buddha is just the antithesis, you could say, of Nrisimha Dev. Very commonly now in Hindu homes, we find Buddha statues, more than Krishna, more than Rama, especially in the more enlightened, or whatever you want to call them, the higher section of society, whatever. Krishna has so many different aspects. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is multifaceted. Everything we see in this world, everything we see in human personality and even animal personality, all derives from the original personality, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. People may be shocked, at least in this part of the world, people may be shocked to see we're worshipping God in such a ferocious form. See? There's a little bit of the lion sound is coming out there. Little bit, very little bit. Such a ferocious form. When Jadurani, she was Srila Prabhupada's first artist disciple, there was an early painting of Nrisimha Dev killing Hiranyakashipu in the second canto of Bhagavatam that was published. Then for the seventh canto, the artists had become much more refined, their devotional life had developed and their artistic skills had developed, and that's really a masterpiece. We didn't have this one here. But Srila Prabhupada, more than once, he saw the picture, supposed to be, and sent her back, more blood, more blood. We need more blood. Srila Prabhupada wanted to show that in Bhaktivedanta manner. It must be 77 or earlier when then Mukunda, he was there. He was not sannyasi at that time. So the devotees put a print of that picture right there in the temple room, huge print, and he was somewhat concerned about that. What are people going to think? Even when Srila Prabhupada was first preaching Krishna consciousness in the Western countries, in America, and he was there in the heart of the hippie heyday, 1967, the summer of love, San Francisco. If you ever go to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair. What's all that about? That's some song from way back. Do you remember that? It was one of the hippie anthems. Yeah. Of course, they don't know that in India, at least in South India, all the women wear flowers in their hair, even the Muslims. You haven't seen? No, they're mostly covered. But well, anyway, we're getting a bit off course here. So the newcomers were shocked when there was Nrisimha Dev was introduced. Srila Prabhupada introduced Nrisimha Dev, and sometimes Srila Prabhupada, even in those days, he would manifest angry Leela. And devotees described how he was there in the Haight-Ashbury area, the heart of the hippie area. And one time he chastised a disciple. He was shouting at him so loud it went all around the street, and all the hippies were, wait a minute, holy men don't do that. But God is all-sided, everything. Anyone here ever get angry? Anyone here never got angry in their life? Put up four hands. You don't have four hands yet. How many hands does Nrsimha have? You have many hands. Many, many hands. Once there was a young man. This was in Madras, I think, South India. A young man from England was present, and Srila Prabhupada was talking how he's talking about Krishna consciousness and chanting, and the young man said to him, yeah, that's very good, and then we can all get on together and we won't get angry. And Srila Prabhupada said, what's wrong with getting angry? Anger in and of itself is not bad. It's what it's directed toward. Although it's one of the three gates to hell, if misapplied. Whoa, flowers in your hair. I got some flowers around my neck. The same, these are actually imported from India for the women to put in their hair and made into garlands, easy garland. Hare Krishna. But anger is also required in this world. I often give the example in India. If the Indian government actually decided to adopt Gandhian principles, non-violence, then within a short time the capital of India would shift from New Delhi to Islamabad, which is the capital of Pakistan. Because the Pakistan would say, oh, non-violence, great, okay, we're going in and we're going to take you over. India has to have an army because they've got long borders of hostile neighbors. It's just the reality of this world. And you have to. Arjuna wanted to become a pacifist, and Krishna told him, no, you have to fight. It's your duty to fight. Someone has to fight to maintain order in society, because there will be bad people. So that principle is there. And Krishna comes as Nrsimhadev. We're talking about allegories. Not exactly an allegory, but we can derive from this that the supreme angry. How angry can you get? Srila Prabhupada also said that someone wants to criticize Krishna for being lusty. It's not, of course, in the present society in the Western world to lust after so many women is considered normal and desirable. But in civilized society, there are rules for regulating that propensity. It's called the institution, the religious institution of marriage. But then people criticize Krishna. Why did he have so many girls? Of course, that is to be understood at a very deep theological level, that these were not ordinary girls, they are pure devotees of Krishna. It's a reciprocation of love. But Srila Prabhupada's response one time was that if you criticize Krishna as being lusty, you cannot deny he's the supreme lusty, because you can't have 16,108 wives. Theoretically you could. Some of the Nawabs in India, they'd have 300 wives or something like that. But one or two of them were happy and the rest were just locked away in the zenana with nothing to do, because they don't have a husband. But Krishna expanded himself into so many forms to personally interact with every one of his wives. So Krishna shows by coming as Nrsimha, so many things he shows. Not exactly allegorical, but lessons we can derive he's the supreme powerful, very potent lesson, because yesterday we were talking about one of the topics we discussed was Muhammad Ali. You've all heard of Muhammad Ali. There must be thousands of Muhammad Alis in the world right now, because it's probably the most common name among Muslims that there is. It's a very common name for Muslims. But when we say Muhammad Ali here in America, people think of the boxer, right? So after he won the gold medal for boxing in the Tokyo Olympics in 1964, general knowledge quiz, he boasted, "I am the greatest." But then later he understood Allah is the greatest. Allahu Akbar. Allah means he's all powerful. So that was a step up for him, but it seemed like he was the most powerful. I mean, I was only a 7-year-old kid at the time, but I wouldn't want to step in a ring and argue with him about who's the greatest. And no one could step in the ring with him and argue who's the greatest in boxing, because he would float like a butterfly and sting like a bee and pulverize them. And he was the greatest in boxing. But he came to understand that there's the higher power, highest power. Hiranyakashipu didn't have that realization. He was the greatest. He could also say, "I am the greatest." And all empirical evidence pointed toward the fact that he was the greatest. Even the great demigods who control the universal affairs, people would bow down to them, but he forced them to bow down to him. And he didn't even need their help for regulating the universe. He took over all their functions of providing water, heat, light. He did it all himself. He was the greatest. He was unassailable. No one could kill him. Krishna came as Nrsimhadev and showed who is the greatest. So that's one lesson to learn. Who is the greatest? Krishna doesn't always show that. Brahma, who gave the benedictions to Nrsimhadev so that he could become so great, he was also on the platform of thinking of terms of greatness in terms of material power, because Brahma means he's the topmost in the universe. Hiranyakashipu was thinking, "I'm the greatest," although it was, even rationally speaking, it was stupid, because he knows that Brahma is up there above him, and it's Brahma who gave him the boons by which, but Brahma had given the boons in such a way that he couldn't even kill Hiranyakashipu without breaking his own promise. And Brahma's the first Brahmana, so he's supposed to be truthful and not break his promise. So Hiranyakashipu was very confident that I'm safe, no one can do anything to me. And he's worked it all out on the platform. Very good intelligence. What are the different ways you can die? He took the boon, "I will not die in the day or the night. I will not be killed by any man or demigod or beast." He didn't say, "I will not be killed by coronavirus." He didn't get that one. "I will not be killed by any germs." But I guess that comes within the... Is a virus falls within the species of animal? That's still a question open for the biologists. Is a virus a living organism? Is it a kind of animal, or what is it? So he made the boons in such a way that he could not be killed, but Nrsimhadev showed that not only is he more powerful than Hiranyakashipu, and in that way, physically, Nrsimha is the greatest, not Hiranyakashipu, but even intelligence-wise, because Hiranyakashipu thought, I got it all worked out. I've got it worked out that no one can kill me. So he wasn't killed by a man or a beast. Is he a man? Well, if you look at the lower portion of his body, yes. If you look at the upper portion, no, he's not a man, and vice versa. So he's a hybrid, man-beast, joint form, or sometimes comes as a cat. Or is it a man-cat? Then he wouldn't be Narahari. Narahari means what? It means Nara means man, and Hari means Supreme Lord. But Hari also means lion. It's another word meaning for. So here, Narahari means the same as Narasimha. There you go, you learned something. Not to be killed in the day or the night. That's pretty good. Well, what about dusk? Is it day or is it night? It's the twilight zone. It's neither day nor it is night. I won't be killed inside any building or outside any building. Well, what about on the veranda? It's not, you can't fully say it's inside or outside. I won't be killed on the land or the sky or in the water. And he was killed on the lap of Nrsimhadev. He didn't think of that. So he outwitted him. What other things? Neither living nor dead. So he was, yeah, he was, nor by any weapon. So he was killed by Nakha. Tavakara kamalavare nakam adbhuta shringam. He has amazing nails, and shringa literally means horn. Vajradangstra, his teeth like thunderbolts. So he didn't think of all these. He thought he was the greatest, but he's not. So that's a great lesson. So many lessons to be learned from Nrsimha's coming. There's one major lesson, which lesson we can take it, or just confirmation of the Lord coming to this world. Why does he come to this world? Well, he himself says, paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya tadushkritam dharma sangsthapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. I come in every age, he says, Krishna says, to uplift the godly and destroy the miscreants and to reestablish the principles of dharma, religion, simply put, religion. You were discussing that, dharma. That you can't explain it in English. I was going to comment, you can't explain it in Sanskrit either, because there are so many people have attempted, but there's no, what is it? There's one word, dharma. And it multi concepts within that word. But Srila Prabhupada often translated it as religion. But the main reason, which all the Vaishnava acharyas say, is to please the devotees. Otherwise, some big, big, powerful person, they can be removed from the world by a little virus. God doesn't need to come personally. And anyway, they'll all be removed in due course of time. however nasty they were. The 20th century saw some spectacularly nasty people. They were all removed in due course of time. Even Stalin, who was, I think Hitler's overrated. Stalin was really, really, I mean, to his own people. There was no bullet got him, and no one assassinated him. But in due course of time, he had to go. Krishna, in the form of time, destroys everything and everyone. So Krishna doesn't need to come, but he comes particularly to favor his devotees, not only at the time of his coming, but for all time. Shrinvanti gayanti grenanti abhikshnasa smaranti nandanti tavehitang janaha ta eva pashanti achirena tavakam bhava pravaho paramam padam bhujam. Krishna performs his beautiful pastimes and gives us beautiful verses. Just beautiful to hear, isn't it? Even the very sound of it is very beautiful poetry. But by performing his pastimes, he gives topics for us to discuss even now. And by discussing, we become very pleased. It is bhavoshada. It is the hearing about Krishna is the medicine for the disease of dying and getting reborn again. And it's also manobirama. It is very pleasing for the mind to hear. So devotees who take pleasure in that, they can go on taking pleasure. Even now we can take pleasure. Mother Yashoda also told Krishna bedtime stories. You like some nice bedtime stories? You don't tell children at night stories of ogres and goblins, and you don't tell them, they get nightmares. But Mother Yashoda is telling Krishna that once upon a time there was a little boy called Prahlad. And she tells a story, and then she comes to Nrisimha appearing. And Krishna smiles. Oh, I heard that story before. I know that story. So it's something, bedtime stories, how you can dream. Nice dream, huh? That Nrisimha is ripping Hiranyakashipu to pieces. Peace, love and peace. Love for Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu in pieces. But Krishna, he comes to favor his devotees, and the devotees became very pleased. Prahlad became very pleased when Nrisimhadeva appeared. The demigods, they weren't sure what to make of it. They were afraid. Brahma was afraid that he's got so much anger that he might just start ripping us to pieces also, because that Prahlad prayed like that. I have the, being born in a family of demons, I have the seed of demoniac desire, lusty desires in my heart. So he's praying that rip out those evil desires from my heart. So the demigods are also afraid that he might start ripping us to pieces too, because we're not pure devotees. They understood that. We chant daily to Nrisimhadev, Namaste Narasimhaya. And then that's a general offering of respect to Narasimha. And then why do we offer him respect? This is standard, you see, in all the prayers in Bhagavatam and elsewhere. The qualities of the Lord are described. The first one is given, Prahlada Hlada Dayane. Unto you who are the giver of bliss, to Prahlad. Hiranyakashipu's sons, Prahlad, Ahlad, Sanghlad, who's the other one? I don't remember. We don't hear about the other ones. Just that there are four sons. Their names are mentioned in Bhagavatam. But they all have this Ahlad, which means bliss. And Prahlad means more bliss, much bliss. Prakrishta Rupena, Srila Prabhupada often explained this pra, this prefix. But Hiranyakashipu's idea of he will be very happy. My son will be very happy because he's my son. And I will make him happy by teaching him the principles of how to be a good politician. You see, he was having his children taught how to be a good politician with the principles of sama, bheda, dana, danda. First of all, you try to pacify people, then divide and rule. This is politics. How to manage people. First of all, you try to make friends with them and let's all be nice. And if that doesn't work, there's a party coming up again. Divide them, split them up. If that doesn't work, you try and bribe them and bring them on your side. If that doesn't work, and you can do it, you smash them. So this was being taught. Hiranyakashipu wanted this taught to his sons, which means that he wasn't fully confident of his own rule, despite his supremacy. He wasn't fully. Otherwise, there's no need to teach all this, right? I did it all for you, kids. You can just have a good time. But he also had to teach them that, well, as every good politician should know, and as every good politician, is that an oxymoron? No. Good in the sense of being good at doing what he's doing. Every competent politician knows you can't trust anyone. Don't trust, you have to trust someone, but even the people you trust, you have to always be aware that even if they are loyal to you, their loyalty can change. Or their loyalty to you is just a show and they're actually plotting to get you. And that's why in Bengali there's that saying, Ati bhakti chore lokhon. Too much devotion is the sign of a thief. So if you're going to assassinate the president, who's going to do it? It can only be his inner circle, because they're the ones, only ones who can get close to him, the trusted people. So Hiranyakashipu, he still had that fear, therefore he was teaching Prahlad. He wanted him taught all the principles of politics with the idea that he can be very happy in this world. But the real happiness Prahlad got from Nrsimhadev. Prahlada Hladadaye. He is the one who actually gave happiness. Nrsimhadev. And Prahlad was happy on that platform even before Nrsimhadev appeared. In one sense, Nrsimhadev, well, that's one sense, he didn't have to appear. He could have appeared as a germ and killed. In so many ways, he could have killed Hiranyakashipu. But even to give happiness to Prahlad, he didn't need to appear because Prahlad was already fully in bliss of Krishna consciousness. That's what made Hiranyakashipu unhappy. He was completely in bliss to such an extent that even so many ways were made to torture him and kill him, but he wasn't in the slightest bit disturbed because he thought that, Jivane Marane Gati Arnahimo, whether I live or whether I die, Krishna is it's Krishna. If Krishna wants me to live, I'll live. If Krishna wants me to die, I'll die. It's such a platform of God consciousness, we can hardly imagine that, all right, I have to die. Well, even philosophically it can be understood, but to talk about it is one thing, to live it is another thing. We see Dadichi Muni, we find in the Bhagavatam, not a Vaishnava per se, but he was asked to give his life for the benefit of the universe, or for the benefit of the demigods who are ruling the universe. And he was quite ready to do so. Yeah, anyway, we all have to die sometime, so if you can give your life in a noble cause, then that's the best way to die. And he continues to be known for that. Kirtir yasya sajivati. We all have to die, but one who has a good name, he will live on by his good name. And I guess that could be prefixed with akirti. Yes, sajivati. Yes. Do something spectacular, you'll be remembered. So some people try to do some spectacular things which are spectacularly bad just so they can be remembered. That's not good to do that. But he appeared, Nrsimhadeva appeared, to give pleasure to Prahlad. And suddenly Prahlad was very, very happy to see him. But he was always seeing him. Show me God. Where is God? Is he in this pillar? And Prahlad, yeah, sure, he's in the pillar. He already saw him. Yomam Pashati Sarvatra. Who is always seeing me? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, those who are always seeing me. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochane. Santasadaiva Hridyeshu Vilokayanti. How do they see? Those whose eyes are smeared with the ointment of love, they always see Krishna within their heart. And everywhere, you can see him everywhere. Sarva bhuteshu yapashet, in the heart of everyone they see. Bhagavat bhava mamana, bhuteshu, bhagavat yatmani, esha, bhagavatotama. The topmost devotees see Krishna everywhere, in everything. But certainly they're very happy when the Lord comes to this world personally. They're very happy to see him. Very happy. So this is the key to understanding Nrsimha Leela and all the Leelas of the Lord, which is not understood by persons who are not trained in Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, the scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead, or who have a constricted concept of the Supreme. Incomplete concept. I was saying how there was a fear in the Western world that people, when they see Nrsimha, they'll think, how can this be God? But in India, there's no hang-ups about it. Even people are not trained in theology, they're not philosophers per se. But it's understood, even there's impersonalistic undertones, but God appears in many ways, many forms. So there is peaceful Shiva meditating and there's his wife on a rampage. We're killing all the demons with, and there are forms of her who are worshipped. Chamunda, what is that? Chinnamashtaka. She's going around with bleeding heads. Specifically, their heads are decapitated and bleeding. And Chamunda, she herself is decapitated. Different forms of Kali. People worship them. Some people worship them. It's all acceptable within the whole gamut of experience. We see that. We say, well, I don't think God could be like that. But then you have hurricanes and tornadoes, which are manifestations of the power, not even directly of God, but of the material energy. So the hurricanes, tornadoes, that is the power, not even directly of God, but of the material energy. And the material energy, everything is personal. And the age of enlightenment begins with seeing everything as explainable by the laws of nature, which there's no need in that philosophical system or the philosophical systems which arose from that. There's no need for God. That's what the so-called new atheists say. Well, you don't need a God because everything is explained by science. Not everything. Big Bang isn't explained. It's a miracle. Give us one miracle and we'll explain the rest. It's unexplainable. But there was nothing and it exploded. And everything settled just perfectly into place. And here we all are, folks. Just by chance. And how could it happen? Well, not very likely, but there are multiple universes. So in one of them it must have happened. But then the Big Bang was a singularity, so that means singularity means only one. And anyway, that's another topic. But they want to depersonalize the universe. Everything we see, the personalistic, theistic understanding is that there is personality everywhere and in everything. That's considered some primitive, animistic kind of religion to see that there's spirit in trees, spirit in the wind, spirit in the stones. Everything is impelled by spirit. That's considered, that's very primitive religion. And more advanced religion is to understand there's God and there's everything else. Well, even if we want to take a consequentialist outlook, the religion of seeing spirit everywhere in everything made a much better world. We wouldn't have all the exploitation of nature and the exploitation of people, the Native Americans, as they're called. They had such a religion. They would, some of them killed, not all of them killed, but they wouldn't kill wantonly, just as and when required for food. And even as in Vedic culture, they wouldn't cut a tree without first supplicating this. You know that in Vedic culture, they're supposed to supplicate the spirit of the tree. You don't just cut trees here, there, and everywhere. To understand, personality is there everywhere and in everything. And it's not just that everyone is all the same. Everyone is different. And the Supreme Lord is the one who has multi-personalities, but it's not a multi-personality disorder. He's fully in order. He has multiple personalities, which he manifests in different forms. And his form of anger is directed at Hiranyakashipu, but even in this appearance, his main aim is to give pleasure to his devotees. And the devotees take pleasure in worshipping him like that, We have temples of Nrsimhadev. We have in Mayapur. Actually, Srila Prabhupada said they should be in separate temples, but temporarily we have Nrsimha's temple. You look this way, there's Nrsimha, fierce Nrsimha. Most temples are not like that, Nrsimha temples, because you have to be very qualified to worship this fierce form of Nrsimha. You have to at least be cultivating the spirit of not cultivating material desires, because this Nrsimha will rip out those material desires. And most people don't want that. So in Mayapur, you look one side and there's fierce Nrsimha, and then you look, beautiful, smiling Radha Madhava with the gopis, and they have such pleasant looks on their faces, but they're also deceptive. They're women after all. Oops! You can't say that. But that's another feature of the feminine nature, which in spiritual existence is very pleasing. Krishna's very pleased with he likes best the women who behave with him in a contrary way, who get angry at him, who reject him. It's all underlying as love. But it's very hard to understand if we have an idea that love is only being kind. What's the closest thing to pure love in this world is the mother's love for the child. And the mother's love for the child also manifests in sometimes shouting at the child. If you want to love the child and let the child drink the poison or put his hand in the fire, that's not love. You have to train them for their own best interest. So he comes. His main, out of the many reasons that he comes, the first is to please Prahlad. And everything else is there. They all have their meanings. Prahlad is very happy to see him. Very angry form of the Lord. Prahlad himself is peaceful. With that prayer you were saying this morning, may all the living be. It's ironic that he says, may all living beings in the world be peaceful, and he's praying to Nrsimhadev. Is he telling Nrsimha, maybe you shouldn't be so angry? Is it all right for Nrsimha to be angry? He can get away with it because he's God. But no one else should be angry. Everyone else should be peaceful. But internally, Nrsimha is peaceful. Internally, Srila Prabhupada, that was another facet of Srila Prabhupada. He would be so angry, very angry. And next second, gone. It wasn't that he wasn't angry, but the anger was for a specific purpose, to train his disciples, and when it wasn't needed, he left it. But Nrsimhadev is internally very peaceful, that we find in most of the temples. He's sitting there very peacefully. No. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada wanted the form of this Ugra Nrsimha. He particularly wanted this form. We didn't even know about other forms until I hadn't heard about peaceful Nrsimha until I came to India, I think. The Yoga Nrsimha, there are so many forms. Lakshmi Nrsimha. There's so many forms, peaceful forms. But we only knew about this form. So it's not that he's always angry. But that, particularly when this form becomes angry, it is very much manifest. We're supposed to stop at what time? 7 o'clock? 7:30. Okay, I'll speak a little longer. When Lord Nrsimha burst from the pillar, he seemed so angry. I'm reading now from Gopi Prandana Prabhu's translation of and rendition of Sanatan Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the section discussing Prahlad Maharaj. So, 7 o'clock, I have to take some medicine. So when Lord Nrsimha burst from the pillar, he seemed so angry at Hiranyakashipu for abusing his devotee, Nrsimha's devotee, Prahlad, that Brahma thought the Lord might be ready to destroy the entire universe. It seemed like that. But Nrsimha wouldn't do that because he is dharma samsthapanartha. He comes for the sake of establishing dharma. So according to dharma, which he has set up, it is not the time, as Prahlad also said to Nrsimha, now is not the time for the destruction of the universe. And he delegates that service to Shiva. Brahma thought the Lord might be ready to destroy the entire universe. And he knows he can do it. Therefore, Brahma entreated Lord Nrsimha to mercifully reduce his anger. That prayer went unanswered. So Brahma asked Prahlad to intercede. And here Sanatan Goswami quotes from the Bhagavatam. Tata prashama yopehi svapitre kupitong prabhum. He addresses him as Tata, my son. Of course, everyone's the son of Brahma. But to address as son, it makes a feeling, there's an affection. Used to be there in Western cultures, I know at least in English-speaking languages. In Ireland it was very common that older men would speak to me as, you don't know, you never see, and they'd just call you son. Like that. And here in America also, it used to be the, you just see someone's in the, maybe you're waiting in the bus line and you may have to say something, the elder man would say, son, like that. So it establishes, okay, I'm senior to you, you should respect that. And of course, no one's thinking like that exactly, but at the same time, it's an expression of goodwill. It's automatically there. So Brahma says, my dear son, Lord Nrsimhadev is extremely angry at your demoniac father. The word is used kupitam, kopa. There are different words for anger. And this word kopa, there are different kinds. Just like rosha means loving anger. And kopa means unloving anger. Is that right? It means the kind of anger that is one of the gates to hell, not in the case of Nrsimha Dev. So Brahma says to Prahlad, Lord Nrsimha Dev is extremely, and it also means, kopa means extreme anger. There are levels of anger. There are different words in different languages, beginning from irritation to agitation, and then being disturbed, and then you come to angry, and then in English there are different ones, and there's rage, fury. There are different levels of anger. So Nrsimhadev, he's not trying to control his anger here, or it's full blast. The Supreme Lord's supreme anger. We We may get angry, but we can't get as angry as him. We can't, and when he gets angry, it's really dangerous. Little kids get angry, it's dangerous for them more than anyone else. They might hit their head against the floor or something. But you don't become disturbed that they might do some damage to anyone else. Well, probably from the age of four they can do, but they can start to harm even younger children. But they generally doesn't manifest like that. But Brahma was saying, "Here, son, you go, cool him down. Please go, just go ahead and cool him down." Then Prahlad threw himself at the Lord's feet in full surrender, showing, accepting, "You are the boss, I'm your servant." But the Lord picked him up and showered him with affection. So Prahlad wanted to show the position of I'm a fully surrendered servant. But Nrsimha, who had just shown such anger against Hiranyakashipu, now showed another side. Svapotanam Nrikesari. What is that verse? How does that begin? Ugram Ivahaya. Even though you're ugra, you have such affection. The lion has such affection for the cubs, even though she's very dangerous. We don't know. Actually, this, talking about allegories again, the lion, we don't feel afraid of lions. We don't. Anyone here has a lion phobia? People are afraid of spiders. Some people are afraid of mice. We don't find any, because the lion you see on a screen, or you maybe in the zoo you see them. But in India, until recently, they can just come in the village. Or you want to go from one place to another, many times you'd have to go through the forest. And the forest is full of lions, tigers, wild boar, bears, snakes. A very dangerous place, the forest. Lions, very dangerous. So there's something to be afraid of. A lion is on the list of things to be afraid of. It's the natural, what you could call predators of human beings. Now they killed all the lions in India, except in a small area. All the cheetahs were killed. I'm not talking about the politicians, the animals. But they're bringing them back from Africa. They want to reintroduce them. Rhinos. Now they're killing all the elephants. There won't be any left the way it's going. So, something to be seriously afraid of. And it is a possibility. Even Brajahari Prabhu, maybe you know him, town president for many years in Juhu, and he narrated to me he'd have to go to school walking about 15 kilometers every day, one day. He'd have to go through the forest, and he'd just chant the holy names all through the forest. That was his protection, even at that time. Because anything can happen any time. So very dangerous. Lions, they may look nice in a movie, but they are dangerous. Very dangerous. But they have the affectionate side also. And that is described in the Bhagavatam. Sanatana Goswami is quoting, Svapada mule patitang tamarabhakam vilokadeva kripaya pariplutaha uthapya tachchishni yadadhat karambujam kalahi vitrusted hiyam kritabhayam. When Lord Nrsimhadev saw this small boy, Prahlad Maharaj, small boy, the small child invokes feelings of affection, generally, is it not? You see a small child, everyone feels affection. When the child gets older, they don't feel it. Same person. Why is that? Because they're in a helpless state? Is that the reason? What do you think? When they get older, they're also in a helpless state, but people don't feel their affection. They want to avoid them. So the little boy, Nordnishingadev saw the small boy, Prahlad Maharaj, prostrated at the soles of his lotus feet. Prahlad is described, or Nrsimhadev is described as Prahlada Lada Dai, the giver of bliss to Prahlad. But here we see Prahlad is giving bliss to Nrsimhadev. He became ecstatic at seeing his devotee. Raising Prahlad, the Lord placed his lotus hand upon the boy's head, because his hand is always ready to create fearlessness in all of his devotees. Then Sanatana Goswami quotes Brihan Narasimha Purana. Lilihe tasya gatrani svapotas yeva kesari. Lord Nrsimha licked Prahlad's limbs as an ordinary lioness grooms her cub. Out of affection. That he's taken the form of a lion, and where does the lion or other cat species also, where do they get this propensity to lick those they are affectionate toward? Showing affection comes from the Supreme Lord. It's not that he's mimicking the ways of this world, but this world is a reflection of that world. Ever been licked by a cat? Probably not. Not you are growing up in India. Ever been licked by a cow? Probably. It's a bit rough, isn't it? The cat's lick, sometimes a cat licks, or dog lick is more common. But the cat's lick, I remember from long ago, it's a bit rough. What's a lion's lick like? It's probably going to be pretty rough. The cows, when they sometimes lick you out of affection, right? Like they do to their own calves. Their calves have bodies with rough hair, and they can take that. But it's a bit rough it'll make some very slight wound if the cows lick you. But I presume that he gave Prahlad he did it in such a way that Prahlad's limbs, Gatrani, his whole body, wasn't damaged by that. There are so many things in the pastimes. We just get little insight, especially in the Bhagavatam. All these stories, they're stories or theological facts, or the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. They're explained. We have so many leelas. We have in Brihan Narasimha Purana, the pastimes of Narasimha described. In Vamana Purana, pastimes of Vamana described. So they're described in more detail in the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is often very condensed form. It's the condensed form of the pastimes of various forms of the Lord. But every moment, every second of the Lord's pastimes, just like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that at every moment he performed such pastimes that even Ananta Shesh could not describe in millions of years, with his millions of heads, he can't describe it all. And even though Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's quite extensive, but he says, I'm just giving a summary. Because at every moment, Krishna's pastimes, he's interacting with all his devotees. In Vrindavan, he's there with so many devotees, so many cows, cowherd boys, cowherd girls, calves, plus every blade of grass, every insect, every bird, every tree. Krishna's relating with every one of them at every moment, and every one of them is observing and interacting with Krishna. That's another great glory of Prahlad, that he specifically is connected with Nrsimha. Nrsimha came specifically for him, and his whole attention, even though he comes to save the demigods, but his whole attention, all his just like all his anger had been concentrated on Nrsimha. And then after, what's happening when Prahlad is praying to Nrsimha, or Brahma is pushing him forward? In the meantime, he didn't finish with Hiranyakashipu, but he was killing all the demon associates of Hiranyakashipu also. And when it finished them all off, he was still angry. And then Brahma thought, whew, I thought he might cool down, and he finished with all. We're happy to see them all killed, but he's still angry. Who's next? But just like that extreme, intense anger had been focused on Hiranyakashipu, now his extreme, intense love was focused on Prahlad. What a boon. What a great devotee. And we find in this Bhagavatamrita that when Narada is praising Prahlad, oh, you're such a great devotee, the Lord came just for you, your whole attention was on him. But we'll find one symptom of the devotees is why Narada has to go from one devotee to another, because they'll all say, no, actually I'm not such a great devotee. There are others who are better than me. So Prahlad says that, no, I just remembered him sometimes when I was in difficulty, but I didn't actually serve him. You better go and see Hanuman. He actually served the Lord. So like that, the journey, Narada's journey goes on and on, up and up. And the acharyas, they see all of this and they present it all to us. But there's so much, it's unlimited. Even to describe it's some insignificant person of this world, and everyone in this world is insignificant in terms of time and space. We're all here just for a blip in time, and we're in some little rock. If we see the astronomy, we're on some little rock in a whole bunch of rocks, rocking around this earth, whole earth planet. We're so small. But even if we, what to speak of a human being, if you want to describe the life of some insect, you couldn't fully describe it. It is because everything they do, and what to speak of, what are things they do, and what's in their mind and their consciousness, what are they thinking of, why do they do it? Scientists are busy understanding why certain kind of insect does this, and waste their whole life studying some insect or something. Then they become an insect because they spend their whole life studying insects, so they become an insect in their next life. But what to speak of the mind of God? Who can understand the mind of God? Paul Davis thought, we would understand the mind of God. He's a scientist who, because this book, The Brief History of Time, by this Stephen Hawking, finished off that if we could understand this, this, and this about the universe, then we could understand the mind of God. Not he believes in God, but he ended the book like that. Then Paul Davis made another book, another scientist, called The Mind of God. The idea, if we can understand the whole universe, then we can understand the mind of God. And Einstein's kind of God, which God is nature, this kind of thing. But we can't even understand the mind even of an insect, what to speak the mind of a human, how small we are. So understanding, yeah, we go so far. Yeah. We have the science of God. Srimad Bhagavatam is the science of God, which we should understand, which is all summarized in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sutra. Jivesurup hoy Krishna nityadas. Everyone, we may be in human body or insect body or lion body or demon body, whatever, but we're all servants of Krishna. But then to understand, then you have to unpack it and understand who is Krishna. And then we have the whole Srimad Bhagavatam to understand that. And it's all compressed in the first verse of Bhagavatam, who is Krishna. Janmadhyase yataha, that's the beginning Vedantic understanding of who he is. And Vyasadeva has composed this verse in such a way that we can understand the opulence of Krishna, being the Supreme Lord, who's not understandable. The whole Bhagavatam is to understand Krishna, the science of God, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. But in the very beginning says, Muhyanti Yat Suryaha. Even the devotees, Suryaha can be taken as a devotee, they also don't understand. Well, taken as the great demigods, great sages. But then Jiva Goswami also takes this, yes, we can understand it in another way also, for Krishna's pastimes. And Muhyanti Yat Suryaha becomes, the devotees are bewildered by his pastimes into thinking that the kind of God who is understood by the first verse of Bhagavatam as the source and maintainer and destroyer of the universe, the residents of Vrindavan, they don't understand, they're bewildered. But their bewilderment is the bewilderment of love. So who is Krishna? He's the Supreme Lord. He comes as Matsya Kurma, Varaha, Narasimha. Buddha comes the next day, but in the Dasavatar, he comes a little later. But the next form is very peaceful and very cunning. And then again we have, when he was little, he was nice. And when he gets a big, strong body, then again he becomes very fierce, Parashuram. And then we get Ram, who is fierceness again, but very much controlled, establishing dharma. And then Balaram, and then Buddha. He's the one. He's the peaceful avatar. Impossible ideal. Impossible ideal. Why impossible? Well, because Buddhists aren't peaceful. They try to follow him, but they can't be peaceful. It's just the law of the world. In Sri Lanka and Thailand, they have armies, and the armies kill people in their own country. Not all the time, but out of necessity. When there's terrorism, they have to do. And the monks egg them on. So it's an impossible idea. Then we come to Kalki. And then again, destruction, full destruction. And then again, Pralaya Payodhi, and then the Matsya comes. And there's so many avatars. So how to understand? Yes, we should understand. And at the same time, understand that we can't understand anything fully, even we can't even understand an insect fully, we can't even understand an atom fully. What the scientists called atoms, they didn't even know there were atoms. And now they understood. Who proved their atoms exist? Albert Einstein, one of his. Because there was a debate in the scientific community. Do atoms exist? And Albert Einstein was, among other things, he proved scientifically the existence of atoms. And then you have subatomic particles. Where does it all end? Subatomic particles, and then this and that, and then you get down to energy, and can we understand that? No. Scratch your finger here, and on the other side of the universe, there's a hurricane. It's all there in quantum theory. You understand it? No. No one understands it. But that's what comes out of their theories. It all becomes inconceivable. So ultimately it comes down to inconceivability. And then, what's the most inconceivable phenomenon? Okay. Take it further. Eho hoi age koro a. That's true, but take it a little further. Love. Love is the most ununderstandable thing. So that's what it comes to. And we're celebrating Nrsimha's love. Celebrating in blood. Who can understand? Well, we can explain it, but... What does love come with? We got any psychologists here? Any empathetic listening and all that kind of thing? Love begins with acceptance. That's what they say, right? If you're going to have family relationships, how can the husband and wife get along together when you find out you're different in so many ways? There has to be acceptance. So same thing with God. First of all, there has to be acceptance. First of all, accepting exists. And the great theological contribution of the Bible, of the nature of God. I am who I am. That's what it says. In the Hebrew Bible. Who are you? I am who I'm the original individualist. I'm the way I am, this is the way I am, and you are the way I am because you are parts and parcels of me. But you're small. Jivasarup hoy Krishna nitya das. Ultimately, it's all about love. But we all need some... Psychological counseling, because we got our ideas of love all wrong. So psychological counseling begins with hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, but you have to get put in a certain state of mind before you can even... Some people, you can't treat them. They're not treatable at all. You have to come to a certain level of or standard of consciousness. So for that we have chanting Hare Krishna. Everyone can be purified by chanting Hare Krishna and taking Krishna Prasad, and that will help people to come to a level of sanity by which they can begin to understand that Nrsimhadev is the supreme angry, and to worship him is actual sanity. To not worship him, to say that God must be the way I think he should be, is to deny his supreme independence, which is mentioned at the beginning of Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna! So now we're going to give God a bath. Right? Okay. And we're going to bathe him in yogurt. This is a very strange religion. Well, no. We're strange. That's why we think it's strange. We need a psychological session. Or maybe a whole series, right? Psychotherapy goes on over a long period. So we need to have more and more sessions. Then we can gradually understand. Actually, after so many sessions with the psychotherapist, I finally understood I'm not a cat. He's a cat. Right? We heard this morning, sometimes he comes as a cat. I'm not a cat now. I can be in a future life. But my identity is I'm the servant of the Supreme Lord who, among other things, likes to be bathed in yogurt. So let's do it. By his mercy, by Prabhupada's mercy, that we're allowed to do this. Hare Krishna, Nrsimha Deva Ki Jai, Namaste Narasimhaya Prahlada Lada Dayane, Hiranyakashipur Vakshashila Tankanakala, Ito Nrsimhaf Parato Nrsimho, Yato Yato Yami Tato Nrsimha, Bahi Nrsimho, Hridaya Nrsimho, Nrsimhama Dim Sharanang Prabhade, Tavakara Kamalavare Nakamadbhuta Shingham, Dalita Hiranyakashipu Tanu Bringham, Keshava Dhrita Narahari Rupa. Jai Jagadisha Hare. Jai Jagadisha Hare. Jai Jagadisha Hare. Kirtan is. Mukunda Datta is a great singer, and the Supreme Lord loves his singing. And it's true of our God brother Mukunda Datta Prabhu also. You know that in Gaur Leela? Mukunda Datta's singing is very pleasing to Lord Chaitanya. He gives us Mukunda.